Welcome to The Point. I'm Catherine Ident in for Mindy Todd, and today we continue our discussions on racism and white supremacy. This hour we'll focus on youth and their experiences with racism and what adults are doing to help curb both racist incidents and create a more inclusive school culture. A recent published survey of youth on the Cape finds that racist behavior and interactions are common at school. Students who participated in the survey also say teachers and staff could do more to confront and curb racism. Joining us now to talk about this is Jean Morrison, a counselor to youth of color and a consultant to nonprofit organizations in diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. And she's also a representative from Barnstable No Place for Hate. Also joining us is Tamora Israel, a poet, performer, podcaster, and freelance writer working with Amplify POC Cape Cod. And Romy Morgan, a poet and student at Cape Cod Community College. Welcome to all of you. Thank you so much for being here this morning.
Thank you for having us. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Before we get into a discussion, I would like to start with a piece of poetry. Romy, you all have a piece that you'd like to read today. And would you mind reading it to start off the show?
No problem. That would be great.
Go ahead. Thank you.
Okay. Hate, the thing they say don't belong in any place, but in fact, it's associated with race. Should have been long gone, but it lives on to this day. Skills and talents don't even matter in the workplace. If you're Black, Asian, or just not American, you're coming last in the race. The love they give is fake. The hate we feel is real. The scars are now being revealed. Congratulations, you trapped us in a dark room. Suffocation. I'm talking to you, the quote-unquote Caucasian. It's like the world's on drugs. Start the detoxification. Stop the discrimination. We need a transformation. So toxic living in this infection, racist intentions. The traumatization of a Black man or any man that's not Caucasian. That goes for Asians, Haitians, Bahamians, Jamaicans, and even more colored nations. Take it into consideration. If you record and laugh at the acts, then you're a part of the demonization. The misconception of what is right has become a problem across all nations. Everyone is contaminated. Your actions are unsophisticated. Are you even educated? Oh, that's right. It's the other way around. You're the ones who are supposed to be sophisticated. Pardon me. Perhaps the hate you give us aren't supposed to be anticipated. Living in a world full of hate, fake love. Look how the school system set up. Children hating children for their color. Get a canvas. Use one color. A true artist knows the value between multiple colors. It's even more dangerous when my Black brother criticized me for my color. What happened to sticking together? See, that's the problem. They paint a picture within our minds. Now we have Black-on-Black crime. A virus deep in the roots of mankind. Peaceful protest, and we have people dying. Our quote-unquote competition does more, and no one gets to do time. Disruption, digging through office, taking what they could find. But that's okay. It's not Black people swarming the streets acting for peace, because that's terrorism of its highest kind. Man, I'm so sick and tired of mankind. It's like this was the plan from the start. To hate, who's the mastermind? Never mind. Love is hard to find, or kind people, because it's dark within our minds. All the abuse, mistreatments, and lies. But you don't see it, because in those moments, you're blind. Ask yourself this. If you allow the hate crimes, then are you any different from your kind? It's already halftime and we haven't stepped foot in the game. Are we not supposed to get any playing time? It's like we're stuck in a movie watching each other in Lifetime. The hate delivers fast, faster than Amazon Prime. They separate us in different kinds. I said kind earlier because I have to speak your language so you can understand mine. All the pain and hate wrapped up within this poem, digest it. It's chow time. My fellow Haitian and Mexicans are treated along the same line. Stripping us from our value. This cannot continue. This technique they use to cripple. Confident in our art, but they critique. Scared of our potential, mystique. Our efforts are high, but our bodies are fatigued. They say we're antique, belong in a time where it was wrong to speak. Present day isn't as they wish. They could only dream, so they kill us with a knee. I can't breathe. Tears flow from my eyes, but you said there isn't any need for tissues. Stop resisting and there won't be an issue. I'm not, so why do I feel like I need to be rescued? Hold on, let's take it a little bit further. Imagine your daughter being left with no mother. Or imagine your daughter's father getting slaughtered. Imagine a white kid walks into a school and take lives, then being asked if he wants water. Imagine a Black man watching his father get killed. Imagine infants and little kids someday knowing their blood will spill. Imagine being in a system where it's designed for you to get killed. Imagine being hunted like you're the meal. Imagine being stuck in a box with no room and no air to breathe. Imagine living in a world where we're wiping out each other. Imagine going for a run and getting shot because you don't belong. Imagine being a transparent glass that reflects slavery. Let me describe for you the environment in which we need to create. An environment rich as Bill Gates. Not money-wise, but rich in fate. But there are others who still hate, and this is what we need to eliminate. Deeper within our skill base, we need to communicate. A community mixed together like the ingredients in a milkshake. Wash away all the hate with our own homemade self-hate. A positive space, minds of the greats. No discrimination about race. Somewhere safe, solid like heaven's gates. Now let's up the scale, more weight. Problems that has become, problems that are meant to come. That's why our nation is no fun. How do you escape when society is the one with the gun? All these running up and down, our streets are filled with angry people holding guns. People running around with bombs, people screaming white power while blacks have none. Get a hold of the problem from young. If we don't teach the smaller youths, how do we be expecting to be screaming don't shoot? I'm trying to show that all this pain and hate is all in our heads. And until I'm dead, I plan to continue to spread like a virus that leaves so many dead. But instead, I won't kill. I will educate. Open the eyes, make them levitate. The minds, I will elevate. Remember this date, March 2nd. Also, remember my name. I am Remain. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for reading that poem. Powerful and truthful and painful. Your pain, of course, is evident. And, you know, it's painful to hear. I'm a white woman listening, but it's critically important for this type of poetry and for us to hear these words. Romy, does writing poetry help you process and cope with racism you see and feel around you?
Yes, it's a way to let out, you know? Like, I see a lot of people being mistreated. I see a lot of racist stuff around me, and poetry is the way that I interpret all of those stuff. It's a way for me to get my voice heard, you know?
Yeah, and that was really truly a beautiful poem. And with your permission, we're going to be putting that poem online so people can go and read it for themselves. There's so much in there to think about. Romy, talk a little bit more about your experience as a young man of color living on the Cape.
You know, personally, I haven't been experienced to any traumatic racism towards me directly, but you know, I have a lot of friends that I see it happen with them. And the way how I write my poetry is that it's not only my words. I take what I see happening with others and I try to interpret it into my poem. So I'm not only speaking for myself, I'm speaking for others. So a lot of my writings, you know, it's not even my pain, it's others that I see around me. And it's just really hard because being black in America in general is just, you have this sort of weight over your back as if you're a target. You have to worry about, like, really, how are you going to make it in life? Like, what are your goals? Can you achieve those goals just because you're black? You know, like, how are you going to get up tomorrow? You have to get up every day wondering where you're going.
It's a lot. It's a lot of an extra burden in a world that can be a tough place to begin with. Romy, you say that you've seen your friends, you know, be have racist things said or done to them. How do you respond as a friend, or if you witness that kind of behavior or interaction, what do you do?
Mostly, you know, I would go over to my friend because, as I said, being black in America, you really have no power sometimes. So it's not in my power to actually do anything about it. But I try to comfort that friend. I try to let them know that, hey, it's the world we're living in. It's sad, but it's the world we're living in. And you just have to pick your head up every day and know that no matter what, you're going to make it. You know, you have to just be confident and know that the things and the actions that are towards you, that are going towards you, it's not something great, but you have to fight. You have to fight. The key to life is survival. You have to survive. Keep fighting. The moment you give up is the moment you die. So I just try to, you know, motivate them and say, hey, someday it will get better. A lot of years from now, it will get better.
That's a lot to think about in just a few minutes of talking to you. Romy, stay with us. I do want to open up the discussion to our other guests. Jean, I would like to take a look at the survey that Barnstable No Place for Hate helped to conduct last fall And some of the things that we're hearing from Romy, you heard from students all over the Cape, and now you have some data to really kind of illustrate anecdotally what students see and feel at school and in their everyday lives. What prompted Barnstable No Place for Hate to reach out and try to gauge what young people are seeing and experiencing?
Okay, thank you. Really, like many of us, after George Floyd's murder and Breonna Taylor and the countless others came to light, as well as the COVID disparities on Black and brown people, we saw a need to amplify the voices of Black and brown youth. For me personally, after participating in the Black Lives Matter protest, hearing from youth and hearing their pain and dismay.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we wanted. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's my belief that to understand someone, you must listen and hear what they have to say. And it was very clear that the voices of our young people were not on the stage. I mean, many adults have talked about these issues in several forums over multiple years, and there's a history of civil rights and other movements. But the children needed to have a safe space to amplify the voices, in particular voices of young people of color, Black and brown children. And it was so important to listen to them and to find ways to reassure them. And it became clear the best way to do that, to amplify their voices, was to create a safe place. And Romy mentioned feeling powerless, that Black and brown people are powerless. So it was important to put the people of power in a circumstance where they could listen openly to the unfiltered, uninterrupted voices of these Black and brown children.
Mm-hmm. And the survey was based on three questions that asked students who responded to this survey if they've experienced a racial experience, if they've witnessed a racial experience as a bystander, and then called on adults and said to these kids, what would you want in your life and your community to do or do differently or embrace? What was the biggest takeaway in your mind from what you heard from the students, the youth that responded?
The takeaway in terms of recommendations or what really stood out, what was most impactful and powerful?
I think what was most impactful and powerful.
I think Romy's poem captured it all, honestly.
Yeah.
Their honesty, the rawness of what they had to say, and the unapologetic description of their pain and their disdain for what was happening with them. But at the same time, they had an openness to believe that if they shared their experiences with adults who were listening, that change could be made.
Yeah, a hopeful piece and, there, yeah.
And their feelings that were shared were the feelings of oppression, hate, inferiority, and the fears of not being able to succeed or having a weight on them that was working against them. It can leave you with feelings of isolation and not hope that you should have as a young person into what your future is going to be. And another thing that really stood out to me is I'm a graduate of Barnstable High School in the 70s, and hearing from these youth about their experiences, which range from feeling oppressed in the academic system, not having the same opportunity, not having curriculum that reflected them, having harsher discipline, not being listened to or believed as they expressed the aggressions that were happening against them because of their race, racial slurs, and harsher discipline, things like that, really resonated with me because I felt, my God, these children are experiencing the same things that I or others that look like me experience in the 70s. So where are we? Mm-hmm. You know, where are we in terms of race as an American society? And also their pleas, very passionate pleas of not wanting this to continue into for their generation, but also for the next generation of children.
I want to bring in Tamora into this discussion. You, you're also a poet, but you also facilitated a listening session in conjunction with this survey and heard from students, including Romy, who submitted another poem of his. Tamora, with that experience, what was the biggest takeaway from you, for you, from what you heard from students, kind of, you know, thinking about what Jean was just saying?
Good morning. Jean, you hit it right on the head. Having a lot of the things that the students talked about was what they wanted adults to do, right? I think a lot of times we kind of forget that that children have opinions and their opinions are important. So we as adults have to listen to them. And one of the things that was prevalent and kept coming back up was children want adults to walk the walk, you know, don't just talk the talk. Don't just, you know, tell them that things are going to get better and then sweep it under the rug once everything is quiet and nothing gets done. That was a thing that continued throughout this project. Children talked about the way that to move forward is to educate. One of the kids I thought was that they spoke about, I thought was really important, was they said what they wanted adults to do was educate kids at a younger age about racism. Not about, you know, so many times when we talk about racism with children, we do so usually around February and around Black History Month. And every day in my house is Black History Month. And we should be talking to children about racism at a younger age because it is a thing. We all know this. Nobody can, you know, claim ignorance at this point. So I think what the children want us to do is to not just talk about how to make things better, but start putting things into action, you know? And I think this project is a part of that, about listening to what these young people have to say and putting their words into action and making things actually better. And the only way to move forward is together, and that includes young people.
Romy, you are in college now. I believe you went to DY High School. You know, what do adults need to do? We're talking a lot about this accountability piece, this thread through this survey that the students really want adults to validate what they're saying and then not just validate, but actually act on it. You know, do you see yourself as kind of part of what of the adult world now needing to take this mantle up and take it with you? And what does that mean? How do adults need to respond now?
Yes, I do see myself as taking on the adult role now. And personally, you know, the points I was brought up was right on. It does start from the home, from young. You have to catch the seed from before it turns into a plant. You know, you want to start from young. See, oftentimes we have these adults and their focus is on what's happening in the bigger world, but they're not focusing on their own homes. You have to make sure your child knows that it's wrong to discriminate against any race. It's wrong to be racist to someone. It's wrong to treat them badly. You know, you have to love everyone. You have to bring your child up in the proper way so that we can have better schools, better classroom, and a better life, a better society overall.
Thank you, Romy. Yes, that's a powerful and important piece of this. And we continue in this hour. We're going to be talking with educators because we wanted to take that next step from the thread that students cried out for, saying that they wanted some adult accountability. But your point that this extends outward to parents and to the larger community is really an important point that we will certainly be thinking about and considering, especially this hour and in future programs. We do need to go to a break. I want to thank Tamora Israel with Amplify POC Cape Cod and Jean Morrison from Barnstable No Place for Hate, along with Romy Morgan, a poet and a student at Cape Cod Community College. Thank you all so much for being part of the show and for talking just a little bit about this really important and critical project.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. When we come back, we're going to hear from some local educators about what they're doing to confront racism in schools. Stay with us. You're listening to The Point. Welcome back to The Point. I'm Catherine Ident, in for Mindy Todd, and today we're talking about youth experiences with racism and discrimination and what adults can and should do to help both victims and to curb racist behavior. And joining us now is Dr. Meg Mayo Brown, superintendent of Barnstable Public Schools. Also with us for the rest of the hour is Chrissy Williams, a history teacher at Barnstable Public Schools and founder and president of the Barnstable Ally Group, which seeks to amplify voices of communities of color throughout Barnstable, and Amy Lillivoy, an adjustment counselor at the Martha's Vineyard Regional High School. Welcome to all of you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Morning.
We also want to hear from you. Did you experience or witness racist behavior when you were in school? Did your kids bring home stories of racism and discrimination? Give us a call, 866-999-4626, or email us, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Well, we just heard about the results of a youth survey of racism in Cape schools, and a common theme emerged that adults don't seem to place enough importance on validating victim stories and addressing racist incidents and pervasive racism within this culture of the schools themselves. Dr. Mayo Brown, I'd like to start with you first. Do you think it's true that school officials are not adequately addressing racist and even homophobic conduct at the schools?
Well, I think it's fair to say that there is a tremendous amount of work to do to ensure that our school climates and cultures are welcoming, create a sense of belonging. Specifically in the area of race and equity, I think, you know, school districts are wise to launch very explicit agendas around this work. I can speak a little bit to what we're doing in Barnstable as a framework for our equity, knowing that this, knowing that our work and our engagement with educators and staff is something that's going to take a number of years before I think we have an embedded culture around this work. You know, we've created a framework in Barnstable with four components, and the first component is really around individual mindsets. So how are we helping our schools? And when I say our schools, I mean the whole school community, from students to teachers, educators, and staff members, including families. But how do we understand and acknowledge oppression and racism? How do we understand implicit bias and microaggressions? How are we analyzing our data? And the report did a great job of really disaggregating some of the data to show the discrepancies between student groups. And then another component is really, as I talk about it, is around developing racial literacy. So how do we develop the language and vocabulary in our schools to talk about race, diversity, inclusion, and equity? And how do we, you know, create systems where we're prioritizing professional development around anti-racist and anti-bias work? And then third, looking at our curriculum to make sure that we are including inclusive and diverse works, pre-K through 12. And finally, we've been engaged our educators in culturally responsive teaching, professional development. So that's recognizing the cultural capital and tools that students of color bring to the classroom. So those are the four areas that we're very focused on. I just want to acknowledge and express my gratitude for the report, because I've highlighted a section in there that says that I think is again a call to school districts. It says that the responses from students crystallized around three themes: first, to take racism more seriously, hold students accountable, implement consequences. Second, talk to and counsel transgressors, and third, to recognize the problem. So I think if school districts just really took that paragraph out of the report, That's really a call to action for us to continue this work.
Mm-hmm. The survey has a lot of powerful information in it, and that accountability piece that we've talked quite a bit about in this survey of all the information there, that little blurb that you read, it just kind of distills it down. And I think sometimes as adults, we can almost overthink things and start to make them more difficult. And the kids know what they want and what they need and what's right. And I thought it was very clearly articulated in this survey. You said that this is going to take a while. Of course, this is it's a big endeavor because, as you mentioned, there's a cultural piece here in changing the culture and the mindset of teaching staff and students and then outward into the community. So what's being worked on right now at the Barnstable Public Schools regarding race and equity?
So it's happening in each of those areas. First, I do want to say I feel as though, one of the ways that we can be impactful is to really listen to our students. I don't think that I think it's underreported in terms of events or language or microaggressions or things that are happening in our schools. We don't yet have probably a safe place. And when I say place, that means culture and climate of our schools. It's not yet a safe place for students to come forward and report these incidents. And I think on the other piece of that is really working with our educators and specifically classroom teachers. So when you hear microaggressions in the classroom, when you hear a racist comment in the hallway, what tools are we providing our teachers and other staff members to address it, to take it head on, not to let, because when we let those comments go, that in effect is saying that they're okay. So it's doing more of that professional development around what is a microaggression and what are some tools to address it, just as one example. And I know we've got Chrissy Williams on, you'll talk to her in a bit, but the work that she's doing with the Barnstable Ally Group, they've been partnering with us in the school system, going to our schools, doing some professional development in this work to create the awareness, to create the impetus to do more work in this area.
And we certainly do want to hear from you, Chrissy, and you are there as well this morning. But before we do, I want to bring in Martha's Vineyard, because educators and administrators on the island have been thinking very hard about this as well. And the high school conducted a school-wide professional development period that focused on implicit bias and microaggressions. And so, Amy, thank you for joining us. And can you talk about why the teaching staff underwent this training? Give us a little kind of overview of what happened and was it required of teaching staff?
Hi, good morning. Good morning. So, clearly this spring, with the murder of George Floyd, we really started thinking deeply about changes that need to be made school-wide, if not district-wide. I work for the regional high school, so we're really focused on what's happening here at the regional. So we had a full day staff training on cultural proficiency and implicit bias at the beginning of school to address the topics that Dr. Mayo Brown just spoke about, understanding implicit bias, addressing racial microaggressions in classrooms and in the hallways, how to have these difficult conversations about race and culture with each other and with our students. And then from that, we had a smaller group of people, faculty that were interested, that really crosses over into each of our departments. That took the groundwater approach training through the Racial Equity Institute in North Carolina. And the goal of that training is to really get folks to understand and internalize the reality that, all of our systems, including our school, which is what we're focused on, emanate from the racial hierarchy that our country was built upon. So this group of 14 to 20 faculty members has then worked together biweekly to really break down three main components, to look. This group is committed to working with other colleagues within their departments to deepen their understanding of structural racism and, dismantle racism and oppression, not only in the classroom, but in our overall school community. We're looking at curriculum. The English department and the history department in particular are looking to diversify literature and authors, and really committed to supporting the ongoing cultural shift, within MVRHS towards racial and social justice. So this is an ongoing effort by a group of staff members. And as time goes on, we'll be doing more all staff professional development. And then we also have a series of student facing efforts that are happening that are new this year. We have a Black Student Alliance that has been formed, you know, for the purpose of intellectually, socially, and culturally enriching the MVRHS community. The Alliance is working to promote the elimination of social barriers for all students while promoting a greater understanding of Black culture amongst our students, staff, and faculty. I co-lead a Women of Color group that happens weekly with, that was actually started by an alumni who, fortunately or unfortunately, is home because of COVID and not finishing her senior year. But she wanted to do this because this was not something that she had when she was here at MVRHS. So I co-lead this group of young women, and it's really to provide a safe space so these young women can share their experiences and support one another. You know, one of the things that I think is really important that we're working on is really hearing student voices. So we have the Alliance, you know, we run a race, culture, and diversity retreat every year, and we have this Women of Color group. And it's working on getting our students comfortable with talking to our faculty and our staff about what their experiences are. And that has been difficult because as wonderful as we all think we are as educators, there is that power differential. And so in order for there to be real change, I think our student voices need to be heard. And so we're working with our students to create some sort of comfort that they can have having these uncomfortable conversations with our faculty and our staff.
Yeah, there's a trust factor, I imagine, as well. You know, if you're a student who has wanted to talk about this in the past and you haven't been received well by a teacher or a mentor or someone else in a position of authority, may cause you to have second thoughts the next time something comes up that you feel you'd like to talk about or share. If you don't have that safe space and that understanding that you will be heard and that, you know, something will actually happen as well.
Absolutely. And as much as our teachers are saying that they're willing to hear and they want to hear, it's more about working with the students to create that safe environment so that they can have these conversations, exactly what you said.
Chrissy, Dr. Mayo Brown mentioned that you founded or you lead the group Barnesville Ally Group, which is working to amplify the voices of communities of color throughout Barnesville. You've been working in the schools. You're also a teacher and you've been working on creating new curriculum to cover both Black history and to also educate students how to combat racism, understand white supremacy. In your mind, how are students in the Barnstable schools helping to shape the district's policies and guidelines around both diversity education, but also responding to racist incidents at school?
First of all, good morning. And being on the front lines, you know, as a teacher, for the most part, we hear stories daily. We are the ones pretty much that the students come to first if something has happened on social media during the weekend or that day in the cafeteria or whatever. So I would want to reiterate what she said with creating that safe space for students to first speak up. And basically, being African American, obviously I've had racial incidents happen to me, and students probably go through a variety of emotions. Some students might be really sad about it. Some students may withdraw from that particular experience. Some may become very angry. So you really have to kind of read the room, and then you go from there. One of the things that we do from that point is we will, you know, obviously refer it to an administrator, and we just try to be there to help the student during the day to make sure, you know, that they feel safe for the rest of the day. And if there's any other lead up that needs to happen in terms of speaking with a counselor or whatever, that's important. One of the things that I've been working with Meg with is creating a Black history curriculum. We started that this summer. There is a Black history class that is running at Barnstable High School right now. It is an elective. I thought it was incredibly important, and so did she and a few others, that we have this class because students need to feel validated. And if you don't have a class like Black history, then students will start to feel like, well, why is it my history as important as their history? And so once students, you know, if they choose to take that class or any other class, depending on, you know, whatever, if they're, you know, Black or brown, whatever they are, you will see that the self-confidence improves, and that greatly, you know, transpires into the whole school environment. You also have white students that would take classes that, you know, they're learning about Black history too. So the understanding starts to happen. So you have work going on inside of the classroom as well as outside of the classroom.
Hmm. There's so much there, and I want to, obviously we're going to continue this discussion, but I do need to take a quick break. So when we come back, we're going to continue talking with Meg, Chrissy, and Amy about what's happening in the Barnstable and Martha's Vineyard schools to confront racism, listen to students' needs and concerns, and even work on the curriculum to encourage more Black history and more discussion about race and equity. You're listening to The Point. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Point. I'm Catherine Iden, and today we're talking about youth experiences with racism and what school officials are doing to create a more inclusive school culture and curricula. Chrissy, before the break, we were talking about some of the work that you're doing with Dr. Mayo Brown in Barnstable Public Schools to really make sure you hear student voices and, for one thing, get some more Black history into the curriculum so that people of color, Black and brown students, can see their own history represented to them. I wanted to ask you, Chrissy, a little bit about teaching staff. I mean, the survey that we looked at is from students who see a lot of, you know, between their peers, some racist incidents and interactions in the hallways, on the athletic fields and elsewhere. But there's also some comments from students who saw or heard or experienced teachers either, you know, with microaggressions or just not necessarily being sensitive to cultural differences. How is it in your experience trying to push forward new curriculum and a new culture with the wider staff? Do you see buy-in? Are people willing to do that hard work of internal reflection and then action externally?
I would say from my experience, yes, the majority are willing to do the work. One of the reasons why I founded the Ally Group is because I had many friends who were white who, after George Floyd, they wanted to do something, but they didn't know what. That's why the Ally Group was created. And it involves taking a hard look at yourself. You know, what are your biases? What areas do you think you need to work on? And when we've done the trainings with some of the schools and the teachers, the first thing that we always do is we tell them that this is a safe space. This is an uncomfortable conversation and you need to feel safe. And that kind of opens the door a little bit. People start to let their guard down a little bit and really, you know, unpack what's going on and discuss, you know, things that have happened to them, or they'll recall incidents where they've seen something happen personally, or, you know, perhaps in school, and they feel like, yeah, I should have stepped in, I should have did X, Y, and Z. So in my experience, yes, they're definitely willing to do the work. It is a journey. It's not a destination. I tell them, you know, some days you're going to have great days and some days you're not. You have to be willing to learn. That's the most important thing. You have to be willing to learn. And as they begin to feel more comfortable with, you know, the idea of racism and becoming allies, whether they're educators or, you know, whatever profession, or just wanting to be a decent human being, that will transpire into their life. It'll transpire into the school culture, into the district also.
Hmm. And I want to ask the same question of you, Amy, on the Vineyard. You had this professional development with the staff. Are you seeing and feeling that there is real buy-in on the part of the high school staff on the Vineyard to do what Chrissy was just talking about and do hard work?
Yeah, I agree with everything Chrissy said. And I love when you said that it's a journey, not a destination, because, you know, you do a professional development on any topic. And, you know, it sits with everybody for a few days and a few weeks, maybe. And what we want to do is just extend this journey, because it's going to go on and on and on, right? Yeah, I feel like there is buy-in. I think there needs to be more buy-in. I think there, you know, we are a community of staff that's maybe between 80 and 90 folks, and we have three or four staff members that are people of color. And so there's a lot of work that we need to do with our white allies on all of this, and including our school committee, right? We have a school committee that is all white folks. And so I do believe there is buy-in there. We just need to keep pushing it forward, and we need to start with the basis, which is getting people comfortable having these really, really uncomfortable conversations, because they are uncomfortable, but change isn't going to be made if everybody's feeling comfortable. Then we're just going to be complacent. We can't do that.
Yeah, that's really a theme I feel that's emerging from this discussion, is that it's so important to have that safe space for students, of course, primarily, but also if staff is going to move the dial and help to work toward a more equitable school culture and school curricula, there also needs to be a safe space for people to be able, as you said, to process and think about these things and revisit them, because some of these things, you can introduce them, let's say, in a professional development in an afternoon, but there's a lot to unpack there, and you've got to go back to it, I would imagine.
Right. You have to go back to it, and you have to be willing to do it, right? That's the most important thing, like, is for, you know, our white allies to be willing to do their own work and look within, so they can effectively support all of our students.
Dr. Mayo Brown, just hearing now from Amy talking about kind of the makeup of the staff at the Vineyard High School being majority white, in your mind, looking at the staff in Barnstable Public Schools, are you thinking about and trying to attract and retain a more diverse teaching staff?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, when we certainly have, you know, the vast majority of our educators and staff are white. We have few educators of color, or staff members of color. We continue to identify that as a need and recruit, and certainly want to retain. So that is an ongoing effort. I can see Chrissy on my Zoom screen and smiling because she sent me a great article over the weekend from EdWeek about Black male teachers. And I think, again, much of this is how do we create a culture and climate in the district for recruitment and retention of educators of color, and doing that important work. If I can just pick up something that Chrissy and Amy were talking about in terms of individual journeys, I saw, you know, particularly after the murder of George Floyd, a number of our educators and schools became very interested in terms of what could they do for their own personal journeys in this work. And I think we had approximately 13 book study groups throughout the district, and many of them were led by Hope Taylor, who is an associate principal at Barnstable High School, around reading Robin DiAngelo's book, White Fragility. And I think I want to underscore the importance of doing sort of a personal journey within this work, but also supported by schools and the district. I don't think you can have one without the other, right? You have to be willing to take that personal journey, but we also have to create systems and structures in schools and in the district to have a safe place to have these very challenging and difficult conversations with each other. Hmm.
I want to bring parents into this, which Romy mentioned this, our Cape Cod Community College student, the poet, at the beginning of the show, mentioning that this too, also, you have to bring it home, right? Just like students bring their other educational concepts home with them. Have you been hearing, I'll ask you, Dr. Brown, and then maybe Amy quickly, what about parents, and are you hearing from them, and how do you include them in this process?
I think we're beginning to hear a little bit more, not, you know, it's interesting. I had this conversation just a few days ago with someone. There's a difference between inviting parent perspective and participation in and recruiting for it, right? So I think, as I think about Barnstable Public Schools, you know, there's an invitation to participate, you know, because someone had contacted me to say how many people of color sit on school councils or, you know, groups that you have in the school system. And it really caused me to think, well, Well, there's always, I know schools in the district, there's an invitation to that, but do we go out and seek diverse perspectives and diversity to sit and provide perspective and voice on our school councils and on our district groups? And I think over the past year, we've shifted our attention to doing more of that work and being explicit about it, but in the past, not so much.
Hmm. That's really interesting. It's kind of another, retention issue as well, but it's a community piece. Amy, do you have anything to add to that?
Sure. We're looking to start recruit, invite, whatever you want to call it, a parent advisory committee of sorts. We're just sort of like playing around with that in our heads and talking to a few parents about it, just to sort of bring in that parent perspective of what they're seeing with their students in our building. We also, something small that we're doing on Friday, we just shared a live link to Good Trouble, the John Lewis story. Don Porter, who's the director, happens to be on the Vineyard for the winter, and we've partnered with the Martha's Vineyard Film Festival. And so we've invited all families to watch the film and then join us on Friday evening for a Q&A with Don that two of our students of color are going to be facilitating. So we send out this information, and then we always try and put in some questions or some prompts that parents can have with their students and with their families in general. So when we're doing, school-wide events like that, we try and bring the parents in and include them as part of our community.
Hmm. A lot of work going on. We just have a minute or so left, but we have a listener from Vineyard Haven who asks, should school committees that are all white develop diversity councils to help advise them?
Well, that's interesting. That's what I was just saying. I think that that's something that we have in our minds that we would like to do.
Okay.
And we're just at the beginning of thinking about that.
I would just add, I think that's a great idea. The Barnesville School Committee recently adopted an anti-racism resolution. So again, they're trying to think more broadly about how they can become more inclusive and include diverse perspectives. Yep.
So work happening on multiple levels here. And just finally, for any students who may be listening who have felt maybe in the past that they weren't heard when they experienced or witnessed a racial incident at school, what would you say to that student? Dr. Mayo Brown?
We'd encourage the student to talk to a trusted adult in the school, talk to their teachers, talk to counselor, talk to the administrator, not to, again, we're not going to change the culture and climate of our schools if we refrain from having these challenging and difficult conversations. We want to support our students.
And anybody like to add to that, Chrissy, Amy?
Well, I would just agree wholeheartedly with that. I think, our hope is that every student in our building has at least one adult that they feel like they can trust, that they can go and have a confidential conversation with, and that adult can help them look at the choices they have for moving forward, whether it be a conversation with the other student, a conversation with the teacher, or having an adult have that conversation.
And I agree. I also would tell the students to, perhaps in the future, it might empower you to be a part of the change on a larger scale. I know for me, with things that have happened to me, they've always pushed me a little bit further to really be a part of change. So I would hope that it would empower them at some point.
Well, on that note, thank you so much for joining us. We are out of time. Dr. Meg Mayo Brown, Superintendent, Barnstable Public Schools. Chrissy Williams, history teacher at Barnstable Public Schools and co-founder and president of the Barnstable Ally Group. And Amy Livavoy, adjustment counselor at the Martha's Vineyard Regional High School. We were also joined earlier this hour by Jean Morrison from Barnstable No Place for Hate. Tamora Israel, a poet and writer working with Amplify POC Cape Cod, and Romy Morgan, a poet and a student at Cape Cod Community College. I want to thank you for listening to The Point. I'm Catherine Ident in for Mindy Todd.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.